when we look at it and we measure our life and it looks like a failure, it's because the time frame was too short. If we just broaden the time frame out, we zoom out, we can see like, oh yes, this did lead to this thing. And my life is full of these kinds of examples. For the first time in human history, you and I have the ability to connect to an infinite audience without having to go through gatekeepers and without having to pay for all the infrastructure to do that. When you have a certain amount of expertise, looking at the same problem over and over again, you notice patterns. Low variance in process equals low variance in outcomes. So if we apply the exact same process, in theory, we get the same bread every single time, or the same pie, or the same meatloaf. We'll zip through a bunch of videos. We don't even care who made it for us because there's no connection to them. Whereas longer form content, you're making the commitment to watch and to stay engaged, so you get to know the person, the personalities behind the content, so you're more likely to show up for them. So you can get really big numbers in short form content and pretty much have 0% loyalty.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Chris Doe. Chris, what's shaking, man?
Hi, Ben. Pleasure to meet you and looking forward to our conversation today.
Dude, I'm pumped by the numbers. I wrote these down, baby. 959K on Instagram, 513K on LinkedIn. The future YouTube station is 2.38 million subscribers, 257 million views. That's quite a bit. Did you do that all overnight?
Yeah, I just started last night, actually. I'm glad you found the numbers. Now, it's been a long journey. Started creating content in January of 2014, got more serious like within a year of starting. First was just dabbling in it, and then like, oh, I think I could do this now.
What's more important than those like big fat numbers, which are fantastic, is I sent out an email asking my listeners for questions, and I got more than just questions. I got literal case examples that, you know, it's not just vanity listens, you're actually moving the needle on lives. For example, my good friend Rachel Lee said, this was all caps, "Oh my God, you're interviewing Chris Doe tomorrow. Fangirl scream. Chris Doe was the person who inspired me to take my creative business seriously and show me what's possible from a creative agency standpoint." Is that what you're trying to do for the most part?
I am. I really am. And I so appreciate your fans and friends saying that to you and sharing that with me, because oftentimes what we do, it's asynchronous. We broadcast and then we don't know who it hits, and we think we're doing something good. And it's not until we hear from people, either in real life, in DMs or testimonials like the ones you just shared, that we know we're actually making an impact. I just shared it this morning in a casual conversation with somebody, and they're like, why are you so passionate about doing this thing that you're doing? And the reason is because I've been more financially successful than I ever dreamt possible as a first generation immigrant to this country. That now that I'm unburdened with this need to make money, I'm burdened with the need to make an impact with my life. And this is what I'm really trying to do here.
Let's talk about that in a second. I promised one more person I'd shout him out. His name's Assad. He lives in Pakistan. He's my full-time designer, does all the graphics for this show. And he started freaking out. You're Assad from Pakistan, who I didn't even know was a Chris Doe fan, is a Chris Doe fan. But you started as an immigrant and now you're an Emmy Award winner. What? Tell me about that. Yeah, go a little deeper on that, Chris.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who come to America or to new countries because they need a fresh start. For us, we're escaping communism as the fall of Saigon. And we land, luckily, in California, ultimately. And I do what everybody does of my generation and try to pursue a respectable career. And my older brother, he got all the brains and he has the study habits. So he winds up going to Stanford and becoming a software engineer, working for very high level tech companies and doing very well for himself. But all the brains didn't fall on me. But I did get a healthy dose of my mom's creativity, her passion, her imagination. And I didn't know what to do with that. I struggled mightily to find my own identity and place in the world. And it just so happened that I was accidentally introduced to a job where I was a person who would ink over another person's drawings at a silk screen shop. And that is like this little snowflake that turns into a snowball that then turns into an avalanche where I pursue a degree in design at Art Center. And I start working in the motion design industry, making commercials and music videos, which then ultimately lead to this place where you can win awards and be recognized.
Chris, where do we learn more about your story? I'm putting it in the show notes.
Yes, there's two places you can go. You go to thefuture.com, which is basically a collection of everything we've done, including a lot of our content. But probably the easiest place is to go and have a listen to our podcast. It's The Future, same name, F-U-T-U-R. And you can listen to a bunch of stories where I talk to people and people ask me questions.
Top 10 marketing podcasts. It's a fantastic one. And I said in the green room, I want to do something different today because I've never done this on the show, but you're the personal branding expert and I don't want to waste any time with you. So we're going to create kind of a situation. We're going to create it from scratch. So I'm a creative person. I don't have a personal brand and I'm working in corporate, but in the next year, I want to be able to replace that income. And using my personal brand and my skill set, ultimately create a business for myself. Where should we start in? First, I guess we got to determine what is this person's skill set? You want to come up with that? What's their skill set?
Yeah. I want to make this distinction here. A lot of people use the word personal brand in ways that I don't necessarily agree or align with. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just not what I align with. What this person's looking for is a business plan, a marketing plan, and a branding plan for their company. And this has not a lot to do with the person. And I can separate the two. So let me help this person. So they're working a 9-to-5 and they're trying to figure out how they can escape the rat race and build their own fortune, if you will, to capture some of the value that they've created in the world versus receiving a salary. The first thing they need to do is they have to have a marketable skill. And a lot of people don't have that just yet. A marketable skill can be defined as the market is hungry for what it is that you do. And there are enough of those people who are willing to give you money and they're actively seeking you right now. So if we say you're a designer, we can maybe say a web designer or a logo designer. Does that work for you?
Sure. Web designer. And let's ask this question. How do we figure out what our marketable skill is?
Okay. Well, what are you currently being paid to do right now? I mean, they're working in a job. Maybe they're in the marketing department. They're in the design department. Whatever it is, the market is already telling you that's valuable to them. But if you're pre-employment and you're not sure because you're still in college, the question becomes a little bit more difficult. Do you want to tackle that or do you want to stick to the scenario that you've designed?
We'll stick to the scenario.
Okay. So assuming that you're working at maybe a bigger agency, maybe it's a 30 to 50 person agency and you're one of 5 web designers, and you've put in your time, you've learned your craft, you know how to work with management, you know how to work with people who report to you. So it's a good time for you to investigate this. And the first thing that you should do is you should start to build up body of work. People will refer to this as a portfolio. A fancier version of this is case studies to show what you got, your process, how you work through the problem, and not just the end result. And the analogy I'd like to make to people is if you just see a finely made meal, something that's prepared, you can appreciate it if you can get your hands on it, if you can taste it. But when the chef shows you the entire process of how they made the bread from scratch, how they actually grew the vegetables and how they prepared the sauces, and it's all this prep work, by the time you get to see the meal, you'll have appreciated it much more because the level of attention that was put into it and how they made it is really important to people these days. So if you just show finished product web design, people don't know what you did. If you show a before and after, that makes it very clear. If you show the wireframes, if you show how you built user journey maps and how you looked through the visual design and explored all these things, now that's kind of like the metaphor where it's like, yes, I see what you do. And what they do is they envision their product, their service, their company through that pipeline. And I love to quote Blair Enns. He's a very influential person in my life. And I'll say this, when you have a certain amount of expertise, looking at the same problem over and over again, you notice patterns. So you'll develop like an ironclad process. And he says, low variance in process equals low variance in outcomes. So if we apply the exact same process, in theory, we get the same bread every single time or the same pie or the same meatloaf. And what people want to do is they want to buy the bread, the meatloaf, and the pie that you're known for. They don't want to guess. Sometimes it's salty, sometimes it's dry, sometimes it's too sweet, right? So what you want to do is have a very clearly defined process and to communicate that to the world. This is how we do what we do. So if you like the results, you have to adhere to the process. So you would communicate this on your website. You would show a minimum of 3 examples. Doesn't need to be more. Once is you're good. 2, you could be lucky. 3 is undeniable. 3, it takes 3 to show a pattern. So as you do that, now the next problem is no one cares. No one looks at your website. So you have to do a little bit of work. So the bridge to that work is by chunking down what you've done on social media where people can discover you. You need that factor of discoverability to hit the For You page or the Recommend page. This is very important so that strangers who know nothing about you, who are looking for you right now, have a shot of being able to find you.
Let's ask this. Social media, oh my God, it's a wild, wild west. Gary Vee says to post 30 times a day. I'm exhausted. What social platforms am I going to use?
Okay. I know that we can get overwhelmed easily by the different social platforms and what it means. Does it feel like we're just pursuing this very superficial existence and chasing likes and fake metrics? It's not about that. The number one rule in social content is first, you must think. And to demonstrate your thinking, you must write. Now, as a visual designer myself, I studied graphic design. I thought I studied design so I didn't have to write or speak. Boy, was I wrong. Okay, so you have to be able to communicate your thinking either with spoken word or written word. And today it's easier than ever. Once you have your ideas, whether you speak it to a recorder to then transcribe it or to write it and then have a robot read it for you or you read it yourself, this is very important because not only do people want to see the work, they want to hear about the benefits to their business, but they want to see the person, the philosophy, and their values and belief systems behind all that. Because we don't want to just buy something. We want to buy the idea behind it. And you are that idea. Mm.
And I can only imagine that can't even be replaced by AI. That's something that's part of the soul of the entrepreneur or the business person themselves, right?
Today, yes. Tomorrow, maybe not. I do not underestimate AI, the pace in which it's moving. I don't know about you, but I see people now writing words and it turns into video clips. Or submitting a static image that they create from one AI platform and identifying areas where there needs to be movement. And people are creating whole commercials that look very high-end to me that in my old days would cost $300,000, $400,000 to produce or be done by one person with almost no budget.
So we're going down a rabbit hole, but I want to. But I saw an example of a gentleman who created like a video landing page commercial and then was able to face swap his American face with a Japanese face and speak in Japanese, which is fantastic if you want to advertise the same information to a Japanese speaker. But what happens when you get to the fulfillment process? You don't speak Japanese. You're not Japanese. You don't look Japanese. Is that not damaging to the personal brand possibly?
It can be, because then now we have a new problem. First of all, and somebody said this to me, it was Neil who runs the Forward event. He's like, hey, if you're going to translate yourself into a Spanish-speaking or Portuguese-speaking person, make sure someone on the team is Spanish or Portuguese or Brazilian. When they call and they want to talk to somebody, you're like, no habla, this doesn't make any sense. This won't work. But I would not do a face swap. I would do audio translation. They could change your mouth movements to match the language and to make sure that somebody on the team is quality checking this, because sometimes things are lost in the literal translation and you don't want to do that. But they can see you're clearly not Japanese or you're clearly not whatever, that this video was meant to be bilingual or trilingual so that they can understand these things. And the rest of it needs to be in English to say, we'd love to have a conversation with you.
So we can adopt it. We don't have to be afraid of it.
Not at all. We should embrace it, actually.
Embrace it.
Yeah.
Back to the scenario, because we already jumped to level 10. So I'm a web designer. I'm going to get on social media. Did we answer, like, what platform should I be using?
Not yet. So the platform largely depends on who you want to focus on. So you have to go where the audience is, because expecting them to go where you are is not always a wise move. So if it's a more business-oriented crowd and you want to be a professional person, I think LinkedIn is a wonderful place. And there's some scary statistic that says a very low percentage of people that are on LinkedIn have ever made a post. That means you're on the right side of the equation in terms of content. It's not so noisy yet on LinkedIn, and it will be. Plus, the algorithm is like Facebook circa 2010 or something. I don't know what the year was before they made it a pay-to-play model, right? Where now it's like nobody will see your content unless you pay them for them to see it, which is horrible. If your audience is mostly on Instagram looking for little bits of information or to be inspired visually, that makes a lot of sense to be on Instagram. So you have to pick the platform depending on where your audience goes to find new news, to find information, and to be inspired.
So we'll pick LinkedIn, and we won't go microscopic into the LinkedIn algorithm. I've done that on other episodes with LinkedIn experts, great guests, but let's just talk general. So I'm on LinkedIn. I've got this web design business, got a couple case studies, three case studies minimum on my website. What am I talking about on the platform? Am I just posting cat photos?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Please don't share any of your cat photos. And I know you have a beautiful, cute, adorable baby that the world loves, but don't share those photos either. We're out there trying to warm up a cold audience to what it is that we're doing. So there's a couple of things you need to know. Well, who is it that you want to speak to? And be very clear. The more narrow your focus is, the easier it is for you to write content. Because what the next question is going to be dependent on how you answer the first question, right? So who are you talking to? The number two question is, what do they want and need? What external things do they want? What internal things do they need? And we have to kind of balance these two things. And then the next thing is to answer the question, what obstacle stands in their way from what it is that they want? Your job is either to highlight the problem, to give them a solution or some insight to create the transformation they desire so that you're removing some of the obstacles out of the way. Now, believe it or not, most people who are seeking a solution don't know the real problem. So a lot of your content can be focused on what the problem is. And you can talk about that in a number of different ways. You can do it head on, or you can do it sideways to say three myths that entrepreneurs believe to be true about X, Y, or Z, or five things that you're doing that's costing you this amount of money per month, or this is where you're getting financial leakage from your company in your funnel design, whatever it is. So for the web designer, they could say five of the biggest mistakes that people make on the website that lead to low conversions. And they have to talk about it.
Now let's go microscopic. So you need to know who you're talking to, what problems they're having, what solutions you can provide, what their journey looks like. What if I don't know who they are yet? How do I actually figure out who this possible client is?
Okay, if you don't know who your client is, I recommend you stay working at a 9-to-5.
Fair enough.
I mean, we have to get real serious because to throw yourself into the wilderness and not know how to make a fire could lead to some problems. Now, the good news is all the answers are in your past and sometimes in your future. So when you're working in a company, it's like, who keeps calling? Are they sports apparel manufacturers? Are they tech companies? Are they in the fashion apparel business? What? Find out a common theme with the kinds of clients or hiring the agency or the studio that you're working for. There will almost always be a theme. Let's say they take on a diverse group of clients. Find the one that gives you the most joy, the one that is aligned with what your interests are. So for me, if someone reaches out about comic books or skateboarding or mixed martial arts or video games or fishing, I'm all in. I have a lot of hobbies. So it's like, but there are companies that reach out to us that make a tech product I don't care anything about. Well, do we want to make a living doing things that we don't care about? Probably not. You know, we're missing out on the opportunity to do something that sparks joy in our life. And the passion will seep through in the way that you communicate, how you get up every single morning to handle the tough days that will surely be waiting for you ahead. So if you could do that, those are clues. You can also look into a little bit of the future, which is forecasting where things are going. Like, what do you see, Ben, that are trending or increasing in demand these days? What are the top three trends that you would say?
For web design or just life?
No, for just in general, like where society is moving. What things AI, do you notice?
AI, and what's humorous about AI is the other end of it, is human connection. I think because of AI, people are disconnected. So AI, real life connection, joy and fulfillment, happiness.
Okay. Joy and happiness and fulfillment will be a universal.
It's all the same.
End of time. So let's try to pick another trend that you're able to spot. I like both of them, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Give me one more that you're seeing. Like, what is rising in demand these days?
Technology.
Anything
that's already in AI. That's already AI.
Yeah, something else, maybe. How about something in entertainment or news or consumption habits? You could say EV vehicles might be trending. You could say podcasting is trending because there's greater demand for this and more people are doing it. You can say people who understand about personal branding, that's trending because now we have these platforms that are open to us. So for the first time in human history, you and I have the ability to connect to an infinite audience without having to go through gatekeepers and without having to pay for all the infrastructure to do that.
So we'll go with the three: personal branding at scale, AI, and human connection.
Okay.
At its purest form.
Right. So now we can see like where the future is moving. We want to move with the future, hopefully skate to where the puck is going and not to chase it. And say, okay, if we see the convergence of some of these things, it would be interesting for you to move into that marketplace as they're moving towards that place yourself. So maybe you can incorporate, let's pick one of them, personal branding, AI, or human connection. Which one do you think?
We'll do AI because everybody wants to hear about AI nowadays.
Okay, so we now have to find that Venn diagram to overlap between where AI is heading and web design services. So let's brainstorm a little bit. What could we possibly do or to find someone who would need that? Just out of curiosity. What do you think?
The convergence of AI and web design?
Yes.
What stinks is I'm like falling into like being able to create blogs at scale, but that's actually not working the way it used to because everybody's doing that. The capacity to take creative ideas, analogies, case studies, experiences, and create content efficiently without tech skills.
Without tech skills?
Yeah. So let's say you're optimizing a website. You want to create images. You want to create blog posts. You don't need to have a tech background to complete that. And your web designer really doesn't need to know everything in the world. They don't need to be a graphic designer. They have the capacity to do some of that for you.
Okay. I know how to phrase this question. It might spark some ideas in your audience's mind, which is this. When somebody hires someone to build them a website, either to build them a new website or to redo what they've done, what problem are they really solving? Because no one buys a website just to have a website. They're trying to solve a problem. So what problem do you think that is?
It's twofold. One, they probably want to look good. And two, they want to generate income. They want to generate leads. So they want to look professional. No one shows up to work in their pajama pants, but they don't just want to look nice. They want to bring in the Benjamins. So they want to generate leads as well.
Okay. So if we were to take both those, both very good observations. When we say look good and to look professional, let's go a layer deeper. Like, what does that mean to the person that's hiring you? What does it mean to look professional?
Well, since personal brand is one of our big things, we want it to be in alignment with who we are as a business, the ecosystem, the soul of our business.
There's a very smart observation that you brought in one of the other trends that we want to talk about. See how this works? So we're going to glue as many of these things together as long as they support the main tree trunk, right? We don't want to just jam in weird branches that just like that doesn't support it. So when people say, I want to look professional or look good, that's actually reflective of how they see themselves. So we need to go through the process of understanding, well, who are you? Who do you want to be in the world? Because some people don't want to look professional. They want to look anti-corporate. And for them, that's reflective of who they are. So what we can do is, let's go deeper before we get into solutions. When we say they want to generate income from their website, what can we do? What has to happen for them to generate more money? Let's do like three things. What three things have to happen for you to generate more money from your website?
The phone needs to ring. It needs to serve as part of the referable asset. So if someone refers, they Google, they find you, they like what they see. So it adds to referability. So phone rings, higher referability, and let's go legacy based. They want to impact, and whether or not someone's buying from them, they want to create content and information that's going to help people move the needle. And then eventually, when the needle's moved far enough, they start buying from them.
Mm. Okay, you said a couple of things. I'm going to mix it around a little bit. I love doing this dance with you. The phone ringing is the result of an effort that we've done. So I think what we have to do is we have to have a clear offer. Okay. That the site has to be easy to navigate with compelling copy, with amazing visuals and assets. Would we agree?
Yes.
Okay, so we ultimately want the phone to ring, but we have to do something. And then you said something about somebody needs to be able to Google us if they've heard something somewhere. So we have to have really great, friendly SEO pages and lots of them so that we have domain authority, such that when they type in best web designer in Portland or Los Angeles or wherever, you're going to pop up in Google Organic Top 10. That is literally free advertising for you. Make sense? So we need to work on that too, SEO. And okay. And then the legacy is the result, I think, of us doing this consistently over time, such that we build a reputation for ourselves. So again, those are results-based, not necessarily the things that we need to do. Now we're going to bring this all together. And if your audience is as smart as I think they are, they're probably already ahead of where I'm going to go. Okay, so let's put it together. So we want to tap into a couple different trends. We are a web designer working a full-time gig somewhere, and we need to start making content and building website, but we need to speak to a specific audience. So what we would do is we would talk about the problem. Are you the type of person who's built a website and gotten very low traffic with content that's not engaging, that an offer is that's kind of hard to understand? You haven't yet achieved the irresistible offer, and copywriting is a drag, and it's expensive, and it often feels like it's not aligned to your voice. So we're just talking about the problems, right? Mm. And you've been quoted astronomical numbers before, or fly-by-night operations that can give you a bargain basement price, but yet don't understand the real problem at hand. Is that your problem? So that's a piece of content we put out there. And so now what we're doing is we're allowing people to self-select, saying, oh, I do have that problem. So then you have to have a little call to action, which is to say, I'm going to... you can have a conversation with my AI robot, and it's going to ask you a series of short, easy to answer questions to diagnose whether option A, B, or C are the best fit for you. If you want more information, please comment or send me a DM or something like that. We'll get you in there. This is a permission-based marketing approach versus cold outreach, which we're all really annoyed by if you're like me. It's like it shows no class. It shows no effort. So this is what we're doing. We're asking people to raise their hand to say, I'd like to be a part of what it is that you're doing because I identify with all these problems. So now what we can do is we can use AI to assist us in developing great SEO-rich pages that are compliant with the way Google and Bing and whatever search engines exist. We can have it write really smart copy based on a few inputs from the clients and populate an entire website based on a few things so that we're not doing a lot of the hand jamming, writing this stuff. And of course, a human needs to edit this stuff. We can create beautiful assets, mockups, photography, headshots, video assets for a fraction of what it used to cost so that the website has the greatest potential to communicate your values, your interests, and your business to get the kind of transformation that you want at fair price.
Sounds fantastic.
Who wouldn't want to buy this?
Now, let me ask you this. And in a second, I want to get to listener questions. So we'll breeze over these next two. You have an inbound lead. They're interested. How do I sell them? What if I've never done sales? I'm a designer in a company. Now I'm a business owner. How do I ensure that I can come to that agreement and turn them into a client? And then after that, the question is going to be about fulfillment.
I think most of us have the wrong understanding of what sales is.
Sure.
I think sales sounds like persuasion. It sounds like pitching. It sounds like trying to get the clients to move from something that they don't want to something that you want. It's kind of a strange process in which we come to this collective understanding for some reason. To me, sales is asking really smart questions and then just listening. What we're trying to do is we're trying to help the person think, because thinking is difficult, to get clarity on what they want to do and the thing that's going to move the needle for them. So what I would suggest is that somebody's reached out. They're like, okay, Chris, I took the quiz. I got value from it. It's identified me as somebody who really needs this. What do we need to do now? So I would ask them, what are the business goals? How will you measure success? What's your dream outcome look like? Why haven't you been able to achieve this before? And when you have in the past, what's gone wrong? What did you love about the process previously? And so what they do is they articulate their thinking. You're getting valuable information yourself. And in a way, the questions, the way that you structure, will lead them to wanting to go to the next step with you. And then you can very gently ask them, using a Phil Jones phrase, to say, this may not be right for you, but many people who take the quiz, who are at this stage, wind up preferring to do X, Y, or Z. Is that something is of interest to you? And it's very non-confrontational. It's not aggressive. They're like, you know what? It is right for me and I do want this. How much? How long? And when do we start? They sell themselves, essentially.
So explain why you would use a phrase, this may not be right for you. Well, what's the purpose of that line?
I think what it does is it puts them at ease and it allows them to reject it easily. When you say, can I borrow $50? Somebody's now put in a very tough situation where they're like, you're asking me for money, but I don't know you. And will you pay me back? All kinds of things. You're like, if you ask the question, the negative, you know, you wouldn't happen to have $50 that you would be willing to loan me, would you? It's easy for them to say no. And when you allow them to say no, you empower them. You give them the illusion or the perception that they're in control of the conversation. So asking a negative question makes it easier for them to say no. So they'll only say yes if it gives them joy. This is critical if you want to like have a real conversation with somebody.
So it's not this hard close. It's this detached from outcome, conversational offer from a place of empowerment. Because it's a team effort at the end of the day. It's not this like sleazy sales close.
Yes, absolutely. And there's a lot of parallels that you can think. And the one that I can illustrate for you, you walk into a high-end department store or a boutique, a luxury brand. The first thing you feel is, I feel I don't belong here. This is going to be expensive. I don't need or want this. And oftentimes, your prospects are walking into the call thinking the exact same thing. Let's continue. So you walk in this store and the person's like, what are you here for? It's like, can I help you? It's like, my God, it's a little too aggressive. So you'll see in luxury stores, they don't even bother you. They just let you browse. What they do is they work on merchandising and display so that you can see yourselves doing the things that they want you to do. It's very non-aggressive. So only when you're like, how much is this bag? Does this jacket go with this? Or then the salesperson is off in the distance, but is very perceptive and responsive to what your needs are. They'll ask you, are you buying the jacket or the handbag for a trip that you're going on? Is there any occasion we need to be aware of? All of a sudden, you're kind of at ease because they're not trying to sell you anything. By not selling people things, you're more likely to sell more often with less resistance. It's counterintuitive. And oftentimes when you go into these places, they'll look at you like, do you need help? Do you want to store your bags? Do you want some champagne or bottled water? Is there anything we can do to help you so that we make you feel at ease and comfortable? So we know we're able to make harder decisions when we're not feeling stressed out, when we're not feeling anxiety. And so by entering into the conversation, we both know you potentially want to buy something and I potentially want to sell you something. But if we hit this head on, it creates a lot of friction and tension. People don't make good decisions when they're under that kind of stress.
Makes perfect sense. Last piece, we're breezing over it, but the last piece to this this case study example, that at the end of the day, this isn't just rhetorical garbage. This will work in pretty much any business across the board, correct?
Yeah, it will. And you know, sorry, I just want to say this thing really quickly.
Please.
I always wonder this. We put out the same video, we write the same articles, and it hits a bunch of different people. Some portion of the people listen, they don't have the full picture, but they try and it works out. And what they do is they DM me and it's like, I tried the thing that you said and it worked. I'm so surprised. And my response, I'm not surprised. I'm telling you what works. Whether you will do it or not is up to you. And then the vast majority of people who watch the video who are inspired but don't do anything, well, that will never work. And then there's a bunch of people who look at it with the lens of skepticism, just like, this won't work. This is a dumb idea. So they go back to whatever their lives were and nothing changes. You have to decide for yourself, which person do you want to be? The one who's inspired and does the work, the one who's inspired and who doesn't do anything, or the one who questions, nothing works. It's up to you.
It's up to us to choose.
Yeah.
I think the listener knows the answer, but let's go to the final piece here because I want to answer listener questions, or you answer their questions rather. Okay. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. One of the best ways to get new clients is just to have your clients talk about you and be ambassadors, where Ben Albert sends an email and people that Chris Doe doesn't know has incredible things to say about him. So how do I create a customer experience that's worthy to be talked about? How can I make sure that fulfillment goes well?
I used to make this mistake, Ben, that I thought when you paid me to do a job and I did the job, that that's all I needed to do. No, that's what they paid you to do. So if I make you a pizza and you paid for the pizza, I'm not delivering customer service at this point. But if I check in on you, or if I think, you know, do you want extra napkins because I see you have kids, or do you want crushed pepper or extra Parmesan or whatever it is, I start to get this feeling, and it's an unexpected thing that you're doing, and that's what you want. It's an emotional connection that you're trying to build with your customers and delivering delight. And when you're able to do that, they have positive sentiment about you. And then now you can activate them and say, you know, my business is mostly built on positive word of mouth referrals. You wouldn't happen by any chance know a couple of people, one or two people who might benefit from web design services using AI powered technologies, would you? Again, a soft question that's built in for them to say no. And like, as a matter of fact, I would know some people. That's fantastic. I don't need all their details now, but who are you thinking about? And then you would say, Bob and Mary. Like, wow, fantastic. Could I ask you for a favor? Could you tell Bob and Mary by next week something positive about this experience so that I can follow up with them? And is it okay if I check in on you in a week or so? So it's very permission-based. It's not aggressive. It's nonviolent communication. You activate the people who you work with to become your informal salespeople. And nothing is more persuasive than hearing from a friend that they had a good experience with a product or service.
Love it. I want to throw this idea your way. Tell me if you like it. I like using the word nominate. I asked Chris, would you be open to nominating someone for this program who had similar concerns that you had? For whatever reason, I feel like people would rather nominate someone than refer someone. Does that make sense? Have you heard that?
Makes sense. I've not heard that, except for on podcasts.
Fair enough.
It's a powerful word. It gives you a lot of power. Like, I'm going to nominate somebody. So it almost feels like what I'm doing is going to be a benefit to the person that I refer or recommend.
I think a fair question is, it's okay to try different things. It's okay to be creative with it and see what happens.
Absolutely.
So I got a lot of listener questions. We won't be able to get through them all, but we got to start with the girl that introduced us, Erin the Real Deal. Erin Deal, she's been on the podcast 3 times. She's like my best friend by now. But she asked specifically, and it's amazing because you're wearing it. She said, where can I get one of those cool hats, particularly the one with the and symbol on it? And okay, you got it on. So there you go.
That's amazing. What a coincidence. Yes. So the and symbol is from a production studio, a co-working space, an event space in Miami, and they have multiple locations. They're called Ampersand Studios, hence the ampersand that's on my hat. So if you look up Ampersand Studio Miami, you'll find them. And they've been so kind because a hat that they gave me before was stolen. And so they've sent me 3 now. So they're awesome. Shout out to Ampersand Studios.
Shout out. I'll put that in the notes. Appreciate that. Amazing you were when she asked that. So Asad, my designer, UX, UI, and graphic designer, said, what should we do when we feel lost or when we feel a design barrier, feel empty? What is the solution? So we feel empty, there's a design barrier. What should we do?
Yes. This is counterintuitive for creative people to hear. But when you have too many choices, it's going to be crippling. When you can use any typeface, you can use as many colors as you want and use as expensive of materials as you want, that lack of constraint actually will make you block up and freeze. So whenever I find that I'm lost, I have to go back and it's like, did I have clarity in the problem I'm trying to solve? What were the constraints? What are the parameters, the must-haves and the nice-to-haves? And so I got to go back to my original notes. And if I don't have clarity there, I'm going to take a moment. I'm going to reach out to the client. I'm saying, you know what? I'm getting lost in the sauce here. And I'm going back to my notes, and it's because I don't think I got real clarity. Would you mind just jumping on a call with me for 15 minutes so I can do this and make sure that what I deliver meets and exceeds your expectations? So sometimes in that conversation, we're gonna find that nugget, that powerful idea that we can build a whole campaign on or to inform our creative decisions. I'll give you an example. During one of these facilitated brand strategy sessions I did with a large tech company, they had told me something that I thought was awesome. They had said, you know, Chris, what we do is not sexy, but we save people money. And I think that's sexy. So that became that kernel, that germ of an idea that grew and spread into the copywriting. It affected how we designed the logo because it's about the bottom line. So we literally cut the bottom off of the letters and told them this is about the bottom line. That's what you guys care about. And they were ecstatic about that idea. And so that's what grew into something. So I would say for people, get clarity on the problem, have more constraints versus too many. And these could be self-imposed constraints. You can say to yourself, I'm only going to use two typefaces. I'm going to limit myself to three colors. I'm not going to use any photography. It's just going to be all hand-done graphics or type that I designed. That's it.
I love the answer. I want to ask it in a slightly different way to go a little deeper. So for example, I've only heard, but in Pakistan, there's a lot of issues with corruption in government. There's a lot of struggle in the economy. I think a lot of times people have external circumstances that create an internal block where they don't even want to pick up the laptop. What would you say to someone who's having trouble even picking up the laptop and starting to design in the first place to get over that internal struggle?
That is a symptom of a much bigger problem and a much more complicated problem to solve. I've always asked people this. It's like that project that you hate working on. If you were paid twice as much, would you be more motivated? What if you were paid 10? What if you're paid 1,000 times as much? And eventually they all hit a point in which like, yeah, I'd be really excited about it. And I think we become miserable in doing our projects because we're working with people we don't care about on projects that don't stir our soul. But in more practical terms, it's because we're not being paid enough. We're not given enough autonomy to do what we want and therefore not respected. And we don't have a clear target to hit. When anything will do, well, nothing will do. So it's like we're stuck. So I think we need to have some of those variables working in our favor. So I imagine there's a lack of autonomy. They're not getting paid enough and therefore no respect. And the goals are unclear because the person hiring them is unclear themselves. So in a case like this, these are symptoms that is boiling up and presenting themselves as, I didn't want to open my laptop right now.
Fair enough. I'm the one paying him. So him, Asad and I will talk. So Scott asked, what's on your music playlist?
I usually listen to a lot of cinema scores, like theatrical scores, when I'm trying to do the deep work. So things from Hans Zimmer, the Inception soundtracks, those kinds of things really put you in a vibe. And that's what I'm usually listening to when I have to do deep thinking work. When it's not, it's hip hop, it's pop, it's whatever, just music that makes you happy.
Love it. Feel good, make you happy, energy.
Yeah.
Rachel asked, it's a two-part question, but they go together fancily. Okay. In your opinion, what's the best way to build out your personal brand as a creative entrepreneur if you do a mix of client projects and your own projects? How do you find a good balance between promoting your client services and just sharing your own work as a content creator?
Okay.
So she's creating content for herself, but also her clients.
And what should she show, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Imagine if we could take these projects and just mix them up on a table like little mahjong dominoes, right? We're just moving around and then just look, what makes you happy to share? Push everything else off the table and just share the things that make you happy. Sometimes it's the client work and sometimes it's your personal work. It's not always one or the other. So whatever makes you happy to share, because what you put on the world is what you get back. So if you don't like doing dog food packaged goods, well, don't show dog food packaged goods, even though that's what your client hires you for all the time. Maybe you want to move into a different space. You want to do automotive branding. Well, work on a few things yourself, spec projects, and show that. And eventually the world will wake up if it's good. And if they don't, it's because it's not good enough and just keep working on it.
Beautiful. I'm happy I have you here, Chris. Krista said, what do you do when you feel like throwing in the towel? Does that ever happen to you?
It does, but the towel in what? Your relationships, your business, your partnership, the work, the design profession in general? Like where do they want to throw in the towel?
Design profession. We'll tackle that.
All right. I think that's going to tie to the other question you asked. So there's this arc that we all go on. And Seth Godin writes about it beautifully in The Dip, right? So the beginning, everything's fun. We're having a lot of results. And we're learning new things. And it's just exciting to do this thing. And it pretty much applies to everything in your life, whether it's like backpacking, running, weightlifting, or doing design work. It's fun in the beginning. And then over time, the amount of effort that you put into the world isn't measured in kind of like, it's not reciprocated in the result that you get. So this is the tough period that we go through that he calls the valley, where it feels like work. It feels like a grind and it's not so fun anymore. And he's like, most people quit here. They quit when it's hard because now it requires intentional practice, doing something over and over again. We all can play tennis, but to be a world champion, it takes a lot of work. We all can swim, but to be Michael Phelps, it means working out every single day for like 10 years. And that's the thing that separates champions from average people. So his advice is, when you're in the dip, understand that you're in the dip and eventually it gets better. But you got to stay in the game long enough. You got to put in your 10,000 hours. Because on the other side of the dip is a very rare place that people get to. It's to be the elite of what it is that you do, to go from being a designer to the designer, a podcaster to the podcaster. And there's not a lot of competition there because what you're doing and what you've been able to achieve is very scarce, and scarce things are rare and rare things are valuable. That's what you want to work towards. So just remember, you will have dark days. Everything in your relationship, in your business, even in your workout, in your diet, you'll have dark days. Just know that that's just part of the game, and to push forward, to just learn to love the grind and eventually get to the good place.
So in short, a lot of us just aren't acknowledging a long enough time horizon. And it's really that simple.
Yes. I think when we look at it and we measure our life and it looks like a failure, it's because the time frame was too short. If we just broaden the time frame out, we zoom out, we can see like, oh yes, this did lead to this thing. And my life is full of these kinds of examples where at the beginning, it doesn't look like it's going to work out, but you don't quit. You keep getting a little bit better, 1% better every single day. And eventually you're like, wow, I can't believe I got here. Well, duh, looking back, you can totally see it.
Let's do a couple more.
Okay.
It's crazy, Chris, because I just sent out, I've never done this. I just sent out a random email interviewing Christo tomorrow. What should I ask him? Here's a link to his YouTube. And I got so many questions that I'm like, oh my God, I don't even know. I don't even know which ones to choose, but it's a compliment to you. And it's a compliment to the listener. If you guys like the Q&A, we'll do this with more guests. I love Levi's question. He said, how to appeal to a Gen Z audience and how to hold attention for short form content.
I don't know enough about the Gen Z audience, but if I were to ask you, what does Levi mean when he says Gen Z? Give me some of the characteristics or traits.
How to create short form content that hooks people and is beneficial and doesn't just get lost in the noise.
Okay. So we're making the assumption that Gen Z has a shorter attention span, like things that are snackable. Is that the assumption there?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure that's always the case, but let's just assume that is and the variables are set up. So Levi's made the decision that they want to go in on short form content. I will say for the record though, YouTube, TikTok, they're having trouble with retention and engagement with short form. We'll zip through a bunch of videos. We don't even care who made it for us because there's no connection to them. Whereas longer form content, you're making the commitment to watch and to stay engaged so you get to know the person, the personalities behind the content. So you're more likely to show up for them. So you can get really big numbers in short form content and pretty much have 0% loyalty. So I just want to warn everybody about that. Okay, so you get the dopamine hit of lots of views, supposed engagement, but they're really not connected to you as a person. There are examples. So there's a guy, his name is Morgan J. I discovered him on TikTok and he's a comedian singer. He's tallish. He looks kind of Middle Eastern, but he's actually Brazilian and he sings the jokes using autotune. Okay. And he goes, and he has a bit, I don't want to do it because I'm such a bad singer. And I was watching this. It was very charming. It's a little different. And so he's blowing up on TikTok by doing content that's very short. He's picking the very best clips from what I presume to be an hour, 2 hour long show. And it's hilarious. And it's kind of very fun and flirtatious, you know? And he's very self-aware and he's kind of goofy. I love that. So what we're really buying is the personality of the person. So if you make short form content, try to inject as much of yourself in there because that's what's going to create that stickiness and to demonstrate what it is that you do. He's a comedian that sings songs. So by singing and by telling jokes, we're getting a preview of the product. So now he has sold out shows. Matt Rife is another comedian who does a lot of crowd work or what he's known for. So his audience exploded. And so he has sell out shows. So it seems like if we follow this pattern, so if you do woodworking, show you and the intricate process, like the Japanese joinery that without any nails, it just fits together beautifully. I just love seeing that. Or if you make clay teapots or something, show your pottery work. And now I know you and what it is that you do. That's the hook.
That's the hook. Chris, I know you got an Instagram live. I've got you in my pocket 24/7. The links are in the notes. But if you were to send people to one place, an action step to support you, what should they do?
I can be found almost on every single social platform. So look me up at Chris Doe and pretty much on any social platform, and all roads will lead to thefuture.com. So if you really want to support us, listen to our podcast, recommend, subscribe, share with people, because that makes me really happy and I appreciate it.
And Chris, I was trying to be witty when I was saying I have you in my pocket. There's also a pocket full of dough correct?
That's right. There's a little book of my thoughts. And I'm very self-conscious of my own writing and my own thinking. And so it's very nice when people are like, I read your book, I love it. And so it means a lot to me.
It's incredible, Chris. Thank you again for coming on and answering so many questions for us today. You're fantastic, man. I'll continue to support you.
Thank you very much, Ben. You're the second Ben in my life with a glorious beard, so I applaud you.
Beautiful. Talk soon, Chris.
All right. Take care, man.